Chapter 13. Mr. Bagthorpe got his day off to a smooth start by telephoning the Knoll. "I am afraid, Russell," Jack heard him say with ill-concealed delight, "that next time we see you we shall have another bill to present to you. Arioch has been at work again." There was a pause, during which Jack presumed Uncle Parker was giving his opinion of Arioch, followed by a query as to the nature of his latest outrage. "He has put a knife and fork through the skins of two very valuable drums," Mr. Bagthorpe told him. "William expects the bill to be in the region of £30, and has asked me to intimate that an early settlement of the claim would be appreciated. These drums, which threaten the sanity of everyone else within earshot of them, appear to be vital to the sanity of their operator. It is my opinion, as you know, that in a previous incarnation he was a tribal warrior." Mr. Bagthorpe threw in a few insults about Daisy for good measure, and retired to his study in high good humor. The decorators then arrived. They inspected the two rooms, flung open all the windows in the sitting room, and said they would start with the dining room. "Which is to be eau de nil," Mrs. Bagthorpe told them anxiously, "whatever instructions you may receive to the contrary. If a small child with fair curls appears, would you be so good as to let me know immediately?" They said they would. When his mother had gone, Jack, who was sitting on the first landing listening to what went on below, heard the decorators issuing the house and its inmates, discussing the house and its inmates. They made strong comments about the pungency of the sitting room, and talked about whether they should demand an increased rate for going in there. "Could ruin our lungs for life," one said. "Glad Fosdyke comes here, you know. Says the whole lot of 'em are mad as hatters. Especially him, she says. Says he's always standing on his head and shouting and setting fire to things." They set to work nonetheless. Upstairs, Tess and William, Daisy and Grandma, were all presumably working on their projects for immortality behind closed doors. Jack, thinking that there was to be no further interesting action below, was about to fetch Zero and take him for a walk, when the telephone rang. Mrs. Fosdyke came scuttling out to answer it, but the call was for Mr. Bagthorpe. "I'll tell him," she said, "but he don't like being disturbed. Switches his own phone off, you know." She banged loudly on the study door. "For you," she shouted. "It's the papers again." Jack flinched at this. He did not see how the press could possibly have got wind of the drum episode, or that it would have been of interest as a news item. He felt certain, however, that if a newspaper was on the other end of the line, it boded ill for the Bagthorpes. He was wrong. One of Mr. Bagthorpe's dearest wishes was about to be fulfilled. He often, when in low spirits, talked about the way his work was passed over, and that of other, lesser writers, exalted. Whenever he read an article about any other television writer, he would immediately embark on this theme at length, usually ending up by saying, "I don't suppose Shakespeare ever got interviewed either. There is not a shred of evidence that any article was ever written about him during his lifetime. Thank God I fall into the same category." He became particularly vociferous if a laudatory piece about another writer appeared in one of the Sunday heavies, from which his family deduced that one of his fiercest ambitions was to command a quarter page in the review section of the Sunday Times, or, failing that, the color supplement. This, quite exactly, was what was now being mooted. Jack had never seen his father so active on the telephone. He clutched at his hair, changed the receiver from one hand to the other, and paced up and down as far as the length of flex would allow. Jack wondered if he had won the pools. Mr. Bagthorpe denied that he did the pools, but this did not mean anything. Mr. Bagthorpe eventually came off the telephone, after a conversation of unprecedented politeness, and strode into the kitchen, yelling, "Laura, quick, for God's sake, quick!" Jack himself hastily descended and found Mr. Bagthorpe trying to convey to his wife the full impressiveness of the honor he was to receive. "The Sunday Times!" he yelled. "Face-to-face interview with Gerald Pike. They're sending a photographer. My God! Henry Bagthorpe! His life and work! That'll show 'em. That'll show 'em who's taken seriously and who isn't. That'll put a few people's noses out of joint." Mr. Bagthorpe, having had his nose put considerably out of joint so often in the past, was well qualified to judge this. "Lovely, darling!" cried Mrs. Bagthorpe. "But I thought you always said you didn't want to be interviewed." "Don't be a fool, Laura," he told her. "I was talking about all the phony PR junk they usually do. This is a serious critical appraisal. This is in the Solzhenitsyn class. Heavens! His spouse could not but be impressed. When are they coming? Tomorrow, he told her, and I'm relying on you, Laura, to get an immediate grip on every member of this benighted household and not loosen it till the whole thing's over. The first thing is to get that unholy infant and her hell-raising Arioch right out of here. But we can hardly do that, Henry, she protested. She only arrived yesterday. And has already pulled in enough destruction to last most people a lifetime, he returned. Where are they now? Where's mother? Mrs. Bagthorpe Senior, put in Mrs. Fosdyke, come in here not half an hour ago and fetched a pile of them plastic carrier things out of the cupboard. Not a plastic carrier left I haven't got. What for? Mr. Bagthorpe demanded. Not my business to ask, replied Mrs. Fosdyke, who had in fact asked, but had not been favored with a reply. I hope I know better than to put my nose in where it ain't wanted. They are not in the house, Henry, Mrs. Bagthorpe assured him. I saw them go myself. I'm sure you are alarming yourself unnecessarily. One would think, to hear you, that Mother and Daisy are perpetually out to make trouble. I'm sure they have gone on some quite harmless errand. Then you are even more naive than I took you to be, he told her. Listen. They all heard the rush of gravel that invariably heralded the arrival of Uncle Parker. Mr. Bagthorpe was pleased about this because he had something to boast about. He told Uncle Parker immediately of the forthcoming interview. Had to give it a bit of thought, of course, he said, but agreed in the end. The fellow said I owed it to my public, and put like that I could hardly refuse. Indeed not, Uncle Parker conceded. Congratulations, Henry. I hope everything will pass off without incident. Why? Demanded Mr. Bagthorpe, instantly suspicious. What made you say that? Why should it not pass off without incident? Because, Henry, replied Uncle Parker, this household does have a tendency to incident. Particularly, said Mr. Bagthorpe, when that accursed daughter of yours is in the offing. Have you got that money for William? Uncle Parker fished for his wallet, and Aunt Celia inquired, Is darling Daisy being made happy? Mrs. Bagthorpe, the question being so phrased, was able to reply truthfully in the affirmative. We met her as we drove up, Aunt Celia said dreamily. She and mother together, crabbed age and youth. I almost wept to see them together in the sunshine. I know the feeling, Mr. Bagthorpe told her. Sometimes I almost weep. And how poetic, how symbolic, how joyous! Aunt Celia was somewhere off on her own. There were, however, key words in this enigmatic utterance that alerted Mr. Bagthorpe. Poetic, he repeated. Symbolic, who? Why, Daisy, of course, she replied, and Mother, whom she had taken by the hand. Ah, if but all men could win immortality by so fair a means. Look, Mr. Bagthorpe said, if that pair are up to something, I demand to know what. Aunt Celia's gaze rested momentarily and dreamily on Mr. Bagthorpe's ireful countenance, as it might on a stone or piece of bark. She did not read it. De la Mer, she continued blissfully. I heard a little child beneath the stars talk as he ran along, to some sweet riddle in his mind that seemed a tiptoe into song. Mr. Bagthorpe groaned. Any chance of your translating, Russell? He asked. Uncle Parker shook his head. Celia, Daisy, and Mother share some secret, he replied. Ours not to reason why.